It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome, my friends, to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you guys here. We're rocking, we're rolling. We're all about the quote of the day, the quote of today, brought to you by DominatingYourMind.com. Yes, DominatingYourMind.com. That's where you can get my latest book for free, DominatingYourMind.com. Go there, check it out, have lots of fun. You pay a little shipping and handling, or you can go to Amazon and get Dominating Your Mind there. And I think it's like $20 plus shipping and handling. So DominatingYourMind.com, learn how to crush your fears, destroy your doubts, and become unstoppable. The quote of the day, technology is nothing. What's important is that you have faith in people, that they're basically good and smart, and if you give them tools, they'll do wonderful things with them. By the late, great Steve Jobs. Love that quote. Have faith in people that they're basically good and smart, and give them tools, and they'll do wonderful things with them. What a wonderful way to live. All right. Today on the show, Aaron Stewart. Aaron Stewart is the co-founder and CVO of blockchain recruitment platform known as Job.com, relying on a decade's worth of experience in the recruitment industry. Aaron has consistently sought to bring recruitment to the cutting edge of technology. Aaron helped develop one of the world's first multi-post to media by talent attraction portals, and also helped reinvent the way job content found candidates through utilizing matching technology against job aggregation. Aaron, welcome to Money for Lunch.
No, thank you for having me. And it's an awful mouthful reading it out, and thank you so much for doing that. I mean, in essence, in summary, I'm a tech guy that's in the recruitment industry, and in our industry, I've done some pretty cool stuff that's pretty recognized. So that's probably the simplest way to summarize.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? And I love that summary. And I want to start our conversation today with something that I just thought was intriguing. So somebody is referred to your work or to your technology as white collar AI. Talk about this.
Yes, I mean, and it actually goes very fittingly with the statement that you gave about what Steve Jobs had said, which, you know, you give people the tools that they do their job really well. Well, sadly, you know, the tools are so good now that they're starting to take over. And I'd imagine maybe Steve Jobs gave that quote maybe 20 odd years ago when it was relevant, when today, you know, white collar AI is very much infiltrating many of the jobs that white collar workers would be doing. And what I mean by that is, you know, you've got customer service, you've got a level of business development, sales, marketing, etc., that artificial intelligence has been developed now to manage the interactions, the Q&A, the frequently asked questions, and to kind of guide and manage customers on behalf of businesses rather than humans doing it now. And it's so effective at doing it that it's another big scrape towards removing humans out of the process. But the casualty of that is, you know, many people being left without jobs, because then what do they go and do?
Yeah, that's a great question, because so let me add to this that Emory University about 2, maybe 3 years ago came out with a report saying that AI and robots and cognitive type of systems will displace 47% of all workers, I think, by the year, I don't know, 2022 or something. Anyway, it's fairly soon, right? So yeah, as a job recruiting platform, where are these guys going to find jobs?
Yeah, and it's a big problem. It's you can look at it as so many different things. You could look at it from, you know, removing customer service, removing sales, but even down to like, you know, the AI that's used for autonomous cars. You know, in the end, Uber will be a completely, you know, a set, you know, autonomous driven platform. You know, there won't be cab drivers. You don't need them. You know, and that's not like science fiction. This is sort of fact. And and this is, you know, and as you said, it's on its way. So what do these people and this labor force end up going and doing? And you know what? As someone that works in recruitment, I actually don't know the answer to where all of this displaced labor will end up moving to. It will almost be kind of like how there's been the Rust Belt, you know, with you know, the whole the car manufacturing, you know, where once upon a time you'd have hundreds of men and women working on a production line making vehicles, which has now been replaced by robotics and these people are out of work. It's going to be very much akin to that again, for a whole new wave of white collar workers are now no longer going to have a requirement for them. And realistically, it's, you know, what can you skill or move these people in? Well, we know there's booming industries like, you know, the IT development and, you know, web development, software development, stuff like that. Okay, great. But not everyone can be a coder or a software developer. And it is one of those jobs that requires a hefty level of skill and qualifications in order to achieve that. So again, I kind of, even I'm, as a person in the recruitment industry, I'm kind of left with the question that in the next 5 years, what's going to happen to so many of these people that are now, you know, surplus to requirement because the technology has taken, you know, the tool, the very tool that was meant to make them better has now taken their job. I know it's scary though. It's actually a really worrying thing. I mean, I laugh as well because it's also goodness me. But how this impacts all of us, whether you believe it or not, and even the businesses that are seeing the savings because they're like, right, don't need to have offices, staff, you know, all the costs associated with premises, you know, insurances, lighting, desks, everything else, because I don't need this person in customer service. That's true. But the person in customer service that was earning a salary, in essence, or some way or the other, is probably buying your service somewhere down the line. What happens when you remove all of the income away from the people that are the consumers, and now there's no longer any consumers either? It doesn't matter how much you're saving for the use of AI. What happens when the customer base you rely on to pay for your services now no longer have jobs in order to pay for it? And I feel we're reaching this critical mass now. You know, there needs to be something kind of worked out with this. You know, or what sort of jobs will people be going into, or when people are coming out of, you know, high school, college, whatever, what is for their future? What will they actually be doing? And sadly, even for me, there are just so many unanswered questions.
No, absolutely, because, you know, one of the things that I've seen lately is that even what we thought were something that was complex can be affected by some type of AI or robotic system. For example, there is a company, a burger company in Washington State, that instead of having a cook, has a robot making, flipping the burgers. I mean, you know, making the entire burger, including putting it on the bun. And then on the more technical side, my wife, who had a knee replacement, the doctor used a robot for most of that surgery.
Yeah.
So, you know, it boggles the mind what's going to happen, because, and you make a great point. So great. All of these, you know, what do you call it? All these services have been replaced by some kind of AI or robot or cognitive system. But now, you know, what do these people do? Because it's great that Uber has self-driving cars, but now there's nobody to get in them.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and you know, all of these people, like, for example, Uber, you know, all these people that rely on what we call gig economy revenue and they've kind of placed their faith and time and effort into building Uber, you know, by making their service readily available, will then soon be put on the shelf because autonomous cars will do it for cheaper all day long, you know, and more effectively. And now suddenly these people are surplus to requirement and they're gone. And I think, you know, as a person who's a huge evangelist of not only technology, but of recruitment and labor, I believe as a human being, we all have the right to earn a living if we're willing to work for it, you know, no matter what it is that you do. If you're willing to work hard, whether you're a butcher, baker, candlestick maker, as they say, you deserve the right to be able to earn a living, or at least you should do in the day and age and the economy that we live in. And that's actually coming to a point now where that doesn't even matter anymore. Because if there isn't the demand for your labor, it doesn't matter how hard you're willing to work or what you're willing to do, because the reality is you are surplus to requirement. And that's, I find that kind of deeply concerning.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know what the answer is. And that, which annoys me. So, because I don't know what the answer is. You can't impose companies, right? You can't utilize technology in order to make things more efficient or cheaper or deliver a better service because not fair on the labor. Well, tell that to their shareholders, tell that to their bottom line, tell that to capitalism. You know, they'll tell you to where to go, you know.
Sure.
And I think this is the conundrum that we're in now, which is, you know, and, you know, I don't want to get into this, you know, because I am a capitalist, but there is a question on the motives and incentives of capitalism and how it drives technology towards further increasing profits, which actually is counterintuitive to the labor force behind it, because they suddenly no longer have a need. There's no longer a need for them. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it's a very interesting question. It's got to be answered. It's almost like the chicken and egg scenario. Now it's going to be, hey, what happens after, you know, what happens to the chicken after the egg I hatches? I don't know, but it is going to be a weird thing. And so let's back up. Let's talk about, you know, what you guys are doing at job.com and using this blockchain recruitment system. How do you see this blockchain? Because everybody's been talking about blockchain. I don't know if it's been used effectively yet. I mean, you know, people get sidetracked or distracted with, you know, with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency.
Sure.
So let's talk about how you're going to use blockchain in your recruitment efforts.
Yeah. I'm a huge hypocrite because I'm using blockchain technology to remove the human intervention within the recruitment process. And what I mean by that is, you know, we are an automated recruitment platform. So we do what's called permanent placement recruitment. It counts for about $26 billion a year in the United States is spent on that service. And it's when a company needs to place someone into their business, they will reach out to a recruitment agency. That agency goes to market. A human, a recruitment consultant, will go to market and find that person for them, place them into the company, and take 20% of their base salary as the fee for placement. Well, being a tech evangelist and working in recruitment my whole life, we're using artificial intelligence and blockchain technology. And the blockchain technology side is in order to manage a smart contract so that they can deal directly with each other, so you don't need to have a human managing this process. It's all done automatically, but AI makes sure the right person is put in front of the right job and that they go through that application process. And because of all of this automation, it means that we provide a permanent placement recruitment solution for 7% of the base salary, which means we're 65% cheaper than the average comparable supplier because we removed the human recruitment consultants out of the process, which the recruitment consultants, the recruitment industry accounts for employing millions of people, many of them recruitment consultants, and we've built a system that now makes them surplus to requirement. And I think that's why, you know, this topic of white collar, and we're very much part of this kind of removing white collar out of the process, because we realize that technology is sophisticated enough, and blockchain being one component, and its ability to introduce trust in the form of smart contract trust ledgers between individuals means that you don't need a person umpiring or policing this process between anyone anymore. It can be done automatically with, you know, contractual confidence. And that's a very complex explanation of how we do things. I mean, normally if we're selling it to clients, we're like, look, we do recruitment services for 65% cheaper than what you pay your current supplier. And that's typically enough to get them on board. But the technical explanation is what I gave you, which is our use of technology and the removal of human beings out of the process, which makes it considerably cheaper to deliver the same level, if not a better service.
Yeah. And so let me ask you this. Why do you think it's a better service than with a human?
So there's a part, so this gets a little bit into the kind of nuts and bolts of recruitment. There's this layer of hires that companies take on board, which is typically between $60,000 to $150,000 a year, that don't require what we would call a full white glove headhunter service, which is, you know, white glove headhunter is, oh, I'm looking for a new chief financial officer or a new CEO to join my big company. And you'd have a really sophisticated headhunter looking for that person, and they would go into much detail to find the right person. Now, we don't do that. But what we do is we provide this middle tier layer of sort of $60,000 to $150,000 a year jobs where, yeah, you'd have a recruitment consultant who would go to market. They would try and find the candidate suitable. Because they don't want the job seeker to go directly to the company, they would hide the details of the company that that person would be going to work for. Because they only get paid commission if that person gets placed, they don't provide feedback to any of the other unsuccessful candidates, which is not only bad for the job seeker's experience, it's also bad for the company's brand, because it makes it look like it's not a fully start and close recruitment process. And because recruitment consultants are driven by commission to place people into businesses, a lot of the time they sell positions, sell the idea of a job to a candidate to get them in a company, and the retention level is poor. In fact, 46% of candidates fail in the first 18 months. Because we do it differently, so for example, we only charge 7%. We actually give the lion's share of that fee, so 5% salary signing bonus, to the job seeker because they manage the process themselves. We give that to them as part of our fee that we charge. We give a 5% salary signing bonus to the job seeker, meaning that they get paid by using our service, which means we can tell them who the company is straight away so they know who they're going to work for. We use AI to provide feedback loops, which means they always know where they stand and they always know whether or not they've been successful or unsuccessful, and they get feedback from that. And because our system is driven on placement, not on commission, we're not trying to force people into jobs that they may not want to do. But because I'm a consultant, I'm good at selling, I want to get you in there and get my commission. You know, and so that's why categorically and intrinsically you see the benefits of utilizing a service like job.com rather than maybe another major staffing agency, because it has all of these inherited problems because it's a 50-year-old business process and service.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, so let me ask you this. When you are putting all this, I guess, stuff out, or when you were building your platform, because it wasn't always built on blockchain, right? This is something.
No.
So what did blockchain allow you to do? That's what I was looking for. Yep. What did blockchain allow you to do that you couldn't do before?
Okay, cool. So what it allows us to do is it allows us to let a company and a job seeker deal directly with each other without the need of a person sat there monitoring the agreement, the contract of employment, the skills verification, and even the interactions that go on between them, because every single thing that goes on between them is recorded on a blockchain smart contract. And they, like DocuSign or something like that, they effectively fill out their contract between them by using the platform. And the incentive for both of them to see it through is this. Client is going to make a hire by using this service that is 65% cheaper than if they went through a traditional staffing agency. And that's a huge saving, especially for SMB. The candidate, well, by managing my job seeking process through job.com, I earn a 5% salary signing bonus because I get the lion's share of the recruitment fee the company that Job.com charges by placing me. So I'm incentivized to follow all of the prompts and cues and calls to action that the platform asks me to do. And as I do it, I am inadvertently filling out a contract between me and the said employer, which then is kept on the blockchain. And if anyone was to dispute or say, no, this didn't happen, or things weren't done correctly or anything else, you don't need to have that third party or that person, like a recruitment consultant, in the background making sure everything's done properly. You have a recorded contract between the pair of them, which is legally binding, and it's done automatically without the knowledge, really, of either of them knowing that it's going on. But what it delivers is a quality candidate with verified skills, a verified job, a verified company, and that both of them can deal with each other with all the trust and knowledge as if they knew each other. And that's what blockchain technology allows you to do. And that's why we can remove humans out of the process.
All right. So before blockchain, you were not able to do that.
No.
Interesting. Okay. Because there was some automation available, but there wasn't that level of automation is what you're saying.
Yeah, there wasn't that level of automation. And the problem you have as well is, you keep a record on what's called a MySQL database, if we're going to get sort of technical, but that's only a single record by us, which could be hacked, it could be corruptible, it could be changed, it could be manipulated, because these things within the technical world happen very often. You imagine letting the world know, as we have, to job seekers, oh, you can earn a 5% salary signing bonus. Can you imagine how many potential technical people would try and hack that to try and fill out their own deal and say that they're now entitled to this 5%, and the challenge you'd have to go through trying to prove whether or not that was true. Where with blockchain technology, it's not just on us; it's on thousands of servers, distributed ledger, all over the world at the time that it happened. You know, and because of that, the person that also verified in that blockchain to be a good, reasonable, and honest person. It's what we've always been doing, but in modern times, whenever we enter into a relationship, a business, a company, everything's always based on trust. Okay, that's one of the components of how we all deal with each other as human beings. And it's like, how can we bring trust into the equation by using machines? And that's what blockchain technology allows you to do. It's just a very simple tick towards right. Now I can trust. Now I know that you're a person I can deal with. Seller reputations on eBay, for example, you know, oh, I see someone's got 2,000 five stars. Oh, I can trust them. Oh, Trustpilot, they've got five stars. Oh, I can trust them. Good, yes, you can. But how can you trust the recommendations that have been given by all of those people? Because there's no verification of them. Whereas blockchain now brings that, it's that additional layer of trust that means I can definitely be sure that this happened, that I'm entitled to this, that this is going forward, and that I don't need a person, a third party, to umpire the whole thing, which is what saves a huge amount of money and cost.
That's incredible. That's incredible. So where else do you see this blockchain environment being applied? Because let's see, you could do this really – I'm thinking like
of everything
in so many other areas, like real estate and
real estate, health, logistics, supply chain, you know, it's all of these. I mean, and it's happening. I mean, you know, you've only, when people are sort of like, oh, you know, blockchain, we just know it because of Bitcoin. You've only got to look, you know, JP Morgan's just announced that it's got its own blockchain banking system now that it's created. Facebook is releasing its own cryptocurrency called Stablecoin and has an entire team dedicated towards blockchain. You've got MasterCard is using blockchain technology to remove credit card fraud and card skimming abroad now. You know, these are huge brands who are all using blockchain, not as this kind of old, you know, research and development prototype. It's implemented. Amazon Web Services has its own templated blockchain that you can spin up and use on Amazon Web Services overnight. It's already built it. We have one, for example, on Amazon Web Services, on what's Hyperledger Fabric, a private blockchain. So you know, it's not Bitcoin or all of this stuff that people have been talking about. You know, yeah, Bitcoin runs on blockchain and good for it. And, you know, it's had highs, lows, taking plenty of loads now and stuff like that. But that's just one tiny application of where blockchain technology really can improve everything around this. And you know, you don't have to take job.com's word for it. You can take MasterCard, Amazon's, JP Morgan's, and Facebook's word for it, biggest brands in the world. You can take their word for it that this is the future of how people will work and how systems will work. And a lot of the stuff comes down to, you know, removing barriers, increasing trust, removing humans, white collar, and it goes coupled with artificial intelligence beautifully. It's like, you know, it's such a complementary technology. It's one of those things, you know, if you have a tennis racket, you have a tennis ball, or a baseball bat, you have a baseball. They go together. Blockchain and AI go together so well in order to automate processes, bring trust and security to them, that then removes much of the need for humans.
Yeah, it's you know, just like we started talking about.
Yeah,
it's the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I mean, there's so much good to it, and it makes me kind of sad for me because I'm so passionate about it. And I mean, I've been banging the blockchain drum now for some years, and I love everything about technology, but I also am worrying about, what does it actually mean, though, to human beings as a whole? You know, it's going to improve the services you have. It's going to improve the way you live and what you do with your life. Fantastic. But when it starts coming down to, hey, it's going to get rid of 47% of the jobs that we know will be displaced or removed, you start to think, okay, this is a huge sacrifice for so many that is it good? And that's where you come down to the good, the bad, the ugly, you know? So... Yeah. It's a real conundrum.
It really is.
So,
now,
yeah,
I have to say that when we have faced conundrums like this before, we evolve, right? There is something else that comes up. I mean, we know that there are a certain amount of people that are going to be displaced. And let me rephrase that. We know that a certain amount of these people that are being displaced will find jobs in the AI sector, in, you know, whether it's coding or repairing different things or doing something. When I say AI, I should say AI / robotic / cognitive space. So, you know, whether it's 10% or 20% of the people who get displaced may find, you know, jobs in these sectors, you know. But you know what this reminds me of, Aaron, is I was just reading an article about what the tech industry has done to San Francisco real estate, because
you got
all these people up there who are making these outrageous salaries, and
it's unaffordable for most now.
And so, yeah, the real estate now is, like, exactly what you said. It is unaffordable for the average working man and woman.
Who've potentially lived there for generations before it turned into a tech hub, you know, but they're like maybe, you know, third, fourth, fifth generation living in that area, and they're not into technology, no. They might work other roles. They might work blue-collar roles, but as a blue-collar worker, they're not on the salaries that can allow them to afford to live in the areas that they probably grew up in, or the regenerated areas that are now, you know, shiny and new are limited for these new sort of tech hotshots. I read a report where, you know, Dropbox, if you're familiar, average salary of a coder, of a web developer at Dropbox is $330,000 a year. I mean, you know, it's just, and that's true, and it's astronomical amount of money being paid to the best talent, because people, you know, the best talent results in the best technology, the most competitive advantage. Again, this capitalist driven notion, which is fine, we all live by it. But then, in the same breath, those people will be living in and around the Bay Area, and heaven knows how the guy who's, you know, in a blue collar job earning between $40,000 to $60,000 is ever going to be able to afford to live in an economy that person lives in when they're earning five, six times more.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, and what's going to happen in a place like San Francisco is you take somebody, let's say like a plumber, and he's going to have to double or triple his rates in order just to, you know, keep up with everything.
Yep. And I mean, yeah, and that's kind of, yeah, and that is sort of relative to, yeah, and a service-driven person like that, like a plumber, a builder, a carpenter, or someone like that, service-driven, you know, they will be in the position where they probably could turn up and charge the tech guy to fix his plumbing twice or three times as much because he can afford it. And now their standard of living kind of goes up, or they now have the ability to fit in there. But what for these other maybe jobs that don't sit within that space, like, oh, I'm a warehouse picker, or I'm a customer service agent, or I'm a sales representative, or, you know, these people that they're not going to be able to suddenly double their income, triple their income, because it's relative to cost. They just have to, they work on, you know, their own economy. Well, you know, a sales representative or a sales assistant working at Walmart is going to be on X amount of dollars an hour, and that's it. You know, there's lots of people that are able to do that job, which means there's an oversupply. Because there's an oversupply and limited demand, it means that the companies are in the position to dictate the salaries within a degree, and they make it as low as possible in order to increase profit margins. But even to this day, when you look at automation, how many times do you go to somewhere like a Walmart and go and check out, and I don't even know the person, I go and do it in one of those automated machines?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, once upon a time, it was a man or woman stood there, but, you know, bagging it up and doing it for you. Not anymore, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting. And it, at least for the foreseeable future, you know, I think one of the areas that won't be affected by AI is you mentioned service industry, you know, a lot of the creative industries, you know, artists,
creative, yeah,
actors, yep, podcasters,
entertainment,
entertainment. Yeah,
the future for all of us is to become Instagram and YouTube stars. That's basically it. You know, that's the future for all of us. If you're currently working a job, looks like it's going to be lost to AI. Get yourself a YouTube account, do something funny, and hope to God that people watch it. You know, because...
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
And we'll all sit, all day watching each other, being paid to make content, to keep each other entertained whilst the machines do all the work, and then we'll make our livings like that. I agree with you. It's the only one I can think of where, you know, you do need a human involved, realistically. I mean, you can talk about computer animation and stuff like that, but still, people like to watch each other. You know, we're creatures. We love watching each other. Hence why, you know, TV shows like The Kardashians are so popular. That is probably the future for many of these people. Is, you know, become a viral star, become a YouTube star, or Instagram. You know, live there, live a virtual life. So
yeah, that would be great. You know, and that might. And you know, but I tell you something that you said that actually makes sense. A lot of people need to start doing something now.
Yes.
To, you know, whether it's a side gig, you know, 100%. Maybe they can teach a class. They can teach a class online. Something, because the future is happening now.
Yep. Yeah, and you've got, and what's, you know, the challenge with that is trying to convince the man or woman who are on their daily commute now, probably going to answer a phone for one of the major banks to help people with their banking query. You know, you've got to try and convince them to try and understand that the job they're in is in jeopardy, because everything they do is being recorded and tracked. Everything that gets recorded, every answer, every question is then transcribed and parsed and taught to an AI machine. And that AI machine is currently being taught every single conversation that every single bank person or teller ever has in order to create one major brain that will replace them. And that is going on right now. Fact. You know,
sure.
So they need to think about, what do I do next?
Yeah. I mean, look. If you have a smartphone, you need to start thinking about all the stuff that that smartphone does.
Yeah.
You know, how many times a day do you grab your smartphone and ask it a question? You know, what's my stock doing? Or, you know, what's the answer to this, you know, question? And it'll spit out an answer. You know, textbooks are disappearing. Books are disappearing. You know, much less textbooks. You know, all this stuff is changing. So the future is now. Aaron Stewart, we're out of time, but I want to thank you so much for stopping by. And it's been a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's been a real pleasure to be on the show. Thank you.
You bet. Good stuff there from Aaron Stewart, co-founder, job.com. And it's just amazing what is happening to us, right? I mean, it's going to be weird when a car pulls up in your driveway and there's nobody in it. And, you know, we've been talking about a driverless car for decades. For decades, and it's happening. Always, my friend, let's share the show with everybody we know. Thank you so much for your support. And remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.